did. We started discussing the topic of Kavana B'Tfila last week. Last week we covered the idea of waiting before the Tfila and how we do that in today's day and age, waiting before the Tfila in order to get into the proper mindset and what exactly that means, whether it really means we have to wait an hour before the Tfila, that was only the Chassidim HaRishonim, whether a person is supposed to daven from a sitter or better to daven with the eyes closed. Just a couple of more miscellaneous points before we get into the Iker for tonight. If you look in source number 20, the Shulchan Aruch says a very important idea about the mindset that a person has when we go into Tfila. Shulchan Aruch writes, Al Yachshov, a person should never think to himself, Ro'oi hu sheyasa HaKadosh Baruch Hu bakashaso, kivan shekivanti b'tfilasi. A person should never say, you know, I just davened well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I deserve it. It's magiali that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will answer my tefillah in the affirmative. Ki adraba, zem maskei rav anosef shel adam. If you think you deserve something and you go in with an attitude of anything but the utmost humility in your tefillah, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, well, you think you deserve it? So let's take a look if you really deserve it. And then he'll go through all the cheshbonos of all the averos and everything else and all the reasons why you don't deserve it. So el yachshav, what should a person think? Sheyasa HaKadosh Baruch Hu bechasto. You should realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing a chesed with you, and you should hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will continue to do chesed with you. But everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does with us is a chesed. V'yomar b'libo, you should say in your heart, mi ani, who am I already? Dal v'nivze, bal v'akesh me'es melech malchei amlachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, im lo merov chasadav shu misnaik behem im briyosav. A person should go into the tefillah feeling, who am I? I'm a nobody. How can I even approach the Ribbono Shel Olam? Why do I deserve anything from the Ribbono Shel Olam? It's purely an act of chesed. It's not something that I deserve anything from the Ribbono Shel Olam. I can't honestly say with a straight face that he owes me anything. I'm just going in hoping for the chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's how the Shulchan Aruch says the approach to tefillah should be. Now, the reason why I mention that is, first of all, it's good to know. It's very important that a person should have the proper attitude of anivus when it comes to tefillah. But also that reflects itself in a lot of the halachos of how one is supposed to stand during davening, how the body is supposed to be configured while the person is davening. So first thing Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 21, actually go to Sif Beis in source number 21, Tzarech sheyachuf rosho ma'at, the head should be slightly bowed. Shu'ein of lamata la'aretz, if you're looking down to the ground, v'yachshav kilu omid b'beis hamigdash, u'b'libo yichavin lamalu l'shamayim. And think about yourself sitting and standing in the Beis HaMikdash, and your heart should be toward heaven. And then in Sif Gimel, Maniach Yado Al Libo Kfusin, you put your hand over your heart, Hayimanis Al Asmolis, the right hand over the left hand, Va'omid Ke'eved Lifnei Rabo, and you stand there like an Eved in front of his master, Be'ema B'yira U'Bepachad. Again, this is the Shulchan Aruch, this isn't a Musar Sefer. And you stand there in fear and trepidation and awe, V'lo Yaniach Yado Al Chalatzav, you don't stand like this, right? You don't put your hands on your waist, as if, you know, you're waiting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you something. That would be gaiva, and what we're going for, the image we're trying to portray in our tefillah, is one of the utmost anivus and anything that's as far away from gaiva as we could possibly have. So in light of that, well, first, one more thing about the position, and then we'll discuss. And one more thing about the positioning of our bodies, the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Aleph over there in source number 21 writes, Yechavin raglav ze itzel ze bekivun, that our feet should be together when we daven Shemona Esrei. So that's probably the first thing we learn about tefillah in our lives. Because even when we're too young to understand anything else, we go to shul and we see men standing with their feet together. So what's that all about? So the Shulchan Aruch says, our feet should look like they're one. Lihidam muslim malachim, dechsiv behen v'ragleim regel yishara. In order to look like the malachim, because it says about the malachim that their legs were like one straight leg. Kolomer ragleim nirim k'regel echad. That since their legs are together, it looks like they only have one leg. And that's what we should look like. That we're standing with our legs together, it looks like we only have one, that we should look like the malachim. Now, why do I mention that? I mention that because I thought it was interesting. The Magen Avraham in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim has an interesting comment. In Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, in Siman Tav Reish Yud, I didn't put it in the Mar Makamos, I put the Magen Avraham in, but not the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah in Siman Tav Reish Yud, Siv Dalid, writes as follows. In Tav Reish Yud, is the halachas of hadlakas haneros b'yom kippur. So it's talking about all the minhagim leading up to Yom Kippur, preparing for Yom Kippur. So says the Ramah, yesh nagu lilvosh begadim levenim nikiim b'yom kippurim. That there are those that have the minhag to wear white, clean clothing on Yom Kippur, dugmas malachei asharis. in order to look like Malachi Asharis. Says the Magen Avraham, Lefi zeh ein hanashim lov shem levenim. Women don't do that. Why? Tein yicholim lios kemalachim. Apparently there's a rule that whenever we try to imitate malachim, women don't do that. Women don't try to imitate malachim. So as I'm chazering over Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, I see that Magen Avraham, that women are not supposed to imitate malachim, and I don't know if anyone makes the connection, but in Hilchos Tefillah we say, why do we stand with our legs together? Shulchan Aruch says, to look like a malach. The Chora, according to that, women shouldn't have to stand with their legs together. I don't know, I think women do stand with their legs together. But the Chora, according to that, women shouldn't have to stand with their legs together. Apparently, women don't imitate Malachim. Either we don't pass them like that Magen Avraham, or there's another possibility. The other possibility to explain why it is that women taka do stand with their legs together is if you look in source number 24, the Beis Yosef, even though in Shulchan Aruch he quotes the reason that we stand with our legs together is because we want to look like Malachim, in Beis Yosef, and this is why it's always important to learn Beis Yosef, because you get a lot more, and Shulchan Aruch is just a quick summary, so sometimes there are things he mentions in the Beis Yosef that don't even get alluded to in the Shulchan Aruch, but you get the fuller picture in the Beis Yosef. In the Beis Yosef he writes, first, the reason that we want to be like Malachi Ashares, and then in the second line, in source number 24, V'Rabbeinu HaGadol Ma'ari Abu Avzal Kasav Tamacher. If your feet are not together, it may appear that you're in a running position and you're trying to get out of there as quickly as possible. Feet together means I'm not going anywhere. I have nowhere better to be than to be davening to the Ribono Shel Olam, which is always a good idea when we're davening. We shouldn't look like we're trying to run out as quickly as we can and we're trying to get out of there. We're always supposed to look like, that's the idea of the Shah after the tefillah also that we discussed last week, we're supposed to look like the Ribono Shel Olam has all of our attention, has our complete attention. And perhaps for that reason, it's kedai for women to stand with their legs together also during tefillah, even though in a chinami they're not going to mimic the malachim. And the last thing about the way we stand in tefillah that I always found intriguing is that Jews tend to shuckle during davening. I don't know if other religions, I think they may sway in certain, you know, churches or whatever, but we shuckle back and forth during davening, and where does that, it always intrigued me, where that idea comes from of Jews shuckling. Rav Schacht always tells a story of, there was a memoir that someone had, someone who was on the train with the mirror as they were fleeing to Shanghai, so the guy wrote in his memoirs that he saw these a bunch of students on this train, and they would take out these enormous books, and they would open up the enormous books, they would shake a lot, and scream at each other for hours, and then they would put away the books, and they would be best friends again. And he said it was the strangest thing. He didn't understand what was going on. They had these enormous books that were shaking and screaming, and then they put away the books, and all of a sudden they were best friends again. Rav Shechter likes to point out forget the shaking part, the screaming part is that's what the Gemara says in Kiddushin, Esvehev Besufa, that when a Talmud, a Rabbo, a Ben Va'av are learning Torah together, so they're ka'ovim, they look like they're enemies with each other, because they're fighting the Mochamta Shel Torah. But Esvehev Besufa, but in the end, it's going to be Ba'ahava. In the end, that experience of fighting the Milchamta Shel Torah leaves you with a sense of ahava. But it's very confusing to people. What are we shaking for? What's the shaking all about? So, interestingly, in the Kuzari, if you're familiar with the way the Kuzari works, is it's a book written as a fictional conversation that the Melech keeps asking the Chacham different questions about Judaism. Why did Jews do this? Why did Jews do that? One of the questions that he asks is, what's with all the shaking during the prayers? So the Kuzari writes, if you look in source number 26, the Kuzari writes, first he suggests one possible answer, and then he says, in the second line, Ve'ineni savor shehu ela mitzad ha'inyan she'anachnu bo, and he says, what I really think the issue is as follows, Ki mepnei she'yicholim likro rabbi mehem pe'echad, haya efshar she'yiskabtsu asar mehem o yoser al sefer echad. Said, we started praying before the printing press, and we started learning before the printing press was invented. Why are our Sifrei Torah so big? Nowadays, they started writing smaller Sifrei Torah, but traditionally, we had these huge Sifrei Torah. Why are all old Sifrei Torah so big? So, says the Kuzari, when we used to use Sifrei Torah to learn from, right? It wasn't just something that we used to read for Kriyas HaTorah, but 10 students would gather around a single sefer, and they would all try to get a glimpse of the sefer. And the Khazari says, it sounds like a joke, but the Khazari says, what we would do is, you'd memorize a lot of it, and you'd get the basic idea, but very often you'd have to peer in to get one of the words, but then you'd get in the way of everybody else, so you go back out, so someone else could go peer in at a word that he needs. And we kept on, he ended up learning like this the whole time, we're going down, and going back up, and going down, and going back up. And so shuckling was invented. That's how the Khazari writes, yeah.
I saw a television program of children in a madras, Muslim children learning in a madras, and they shake.
Oh yeah, they also shake? Okay, good. So that will fit in with some of our other answers. In fact, today I had the privilege of, I was in Sotheby's today. I got a phone call today that one of my old Talmidim, who has a cousin in the shul, was taking a private tour of the most important private Svarim collection in the world that's right now for auction in Sotheby's. And he was getting a private tour together with Rav Schechter. So I went to participate in that tour as well. So it was three or four of us. And one of the things the guy said to us was he had this collector, if for $50 million, the collection could be yours. You could walk out with it today if you could fit it all in your car. But the one of the things he had, a lot of the things were phenomenal, but he had the first ever printed Sfarim after the invention of the printing press. Happens to be, Jews are a people of the book, and a lot of the first things ever printed in certain places were Sfarim. The first book ever printed in Africa was a Sefer. The first book ever printed in Asia, now Africa, Asia, you don't think as Jewish places, was a Sefer. Because Jews are people of the book. In fact, the people at Sotheby's, just as an aside, they said that they were amazed. They said that they didn't have as much interest in an exhibit, as much interest as they had in this exhibit, in any other exhibit that they could remember, except for two. One was Jackie O, and I forgot what the other one was. One was Jackie Onassis, I forgot what the other one was. But they said they were amazed because this was the only time they had such interest in something that's intellectual. It's just books, right? It's not something gaudy or whatever. It's just something intellectual. So it's a lot of books. We're a people of the book. So one of the things the guy mentioned, he said, the fellow that was giving us the tour said that when he was taking school groups on tours, he would always ask the kids and the teachers, what do you think when the printing press came out and Jews wanted to print a book? What do you think the first book they printed is? So everyone would always respond, the Chumash. Of course they would print the Chumash, it's the most important book. He said, no, they had Sifrei Torah. That's one thing we had. They learned from Sifrei Torah. They didn't need to print Chumashim. It was Rashi. Rashi was the first book that they chose to print. Rashi on Chumash was the first book they chose to print. But anyway, but the point is, they would learn from the Sefer Torah. So the Khazari says, there's no great Chacham over here. The shuckling developed because they were learning from the Sefer Torah and going back and forth. So that's not a very satisfying answer. So the Zohar suggests that it has something to do with Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, that it's the Ner of our Neshama flickering. When you have a candle, it flickers. So we're trying to show that we're all Neshama right now, and when we're davening and learning and doing things that relate to Kedusha, and therefore we have that little flicker to us. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, however, writes in the Siddur, if you look in source number 27, he writes toward the end, let's say, he talks about that. It's a way of focusing. It's a way of gathering all your energy toward a certain goal. And he says that the kachu derech uminak bali malacha ve'esek hazrizim hamisyashim bepuloseim lisnoei lahargish kolivareim shimuzumanim v'cheshek v'askama. He says whenever someone's really trying to focus on something, you ever look at a tennis player right before the serve is about to come? So he's shaking back and forth and back and forth. Right, he's ready to go. He's ready. He's focused on something that's coming. So when you want to put all your focus into something, so very often you get your whole body into it. So that's the idea that is suggested as to why it is that we shuckle. So is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? So the Mishnah Berurah writes that there's another reason. Mishnah Berurah quotes from Pri Chadash in source 28. It's a kiyum of the pasuk of kolatz mosay tamar na Hashem, that my entire body is into it. It's all into praising the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the idea of shaking during davening. It should be noted that the idea of shaking during davening did not go without objection. The Ramami Panu writes in source number 29, in the second line, he says, yeah, maybe when you're learning it's a good idea. He says, well, maybe when you're saying Shevach, when you're saying the Shevach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a good idea. But when you start asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things, when you start doing bakasha, he says, we've discussed recently that a lot of the halachos of tefillah, the Gemara Maseches Brachos, derives from the quintessential tefillah, which was the tefillah of Chana. Right, here was a woman who was desperate, didn't have any children. You know, the co-wife was making, Penina was making fun of her, and her husband wasn't even interested anymore in praying for her. He was just trying to support her in other ways. And she was desperate, and she goes to daven, and it worked. She got exactly what she davened for. Right? She said after Shmuel was born, it was this boy that I davened for. Meaning it wasn't even like it was a little bit off. She got exactly what she was looking for. She was looking for a son. She was looking for a son who's going to be a leader of the Jewish people, who she could dedicate to the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and she got it. She got exactly what she davened for. So that's what Chazal hold up as the perfect example of tefillah. And there are lots of halachos that we learn out from Chana. The most famous, of course, is that we say Shemoneh Esrei quietly, right? Raks Faseha knows, her lips were moving, but Kol Lo Yishmei, you couldn't hear her voice. So we say Shemoneh Esrei quietly. We got that from Chana, that she wasn't Shikora, she was Kshera. Right? We know the famous Gra and the mix-up of the words and the Lichoshen. But anyway, so we know a lot of halachas from Chana. Says the Ramami Panu, Aval b'tfila l'manu b'kama hilchsag avrasa m'kray d'chana, v'zulu didon achas mehen. He says, let me tell you another halacha you can learn from Chana. What does it say? D'chsiv rak sfaseha na'os. That only her lips moved. Rak mi'utahu. The word rak is always a mi'ut, meaning her lips moved, nothing else was moving. Only her lips were moving. Says Ramami Panu, you might think I'm trying to pull the wool over your eyes, because after all, we know that Raks Faseh Na'os meant that she didn't speak in an audible way, that she couldn't be heard. He says, no, the Pasuk says that already. It says V'kala Lo Yishamea. It says you couldn't hear her voice. Why does it have to add in Raks Faseh Na'os? So he says it must be because it's Mimai Tenuas HaGuf, that the body wasn't moving, only the lips were moving. And he quotes Rayas from the Chayos HaKodesh, that their wings would not flap when they're singing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so our wings shouldn't flap either, and we should stand still when davening. So Yaakov Emden says, I'm not convinced either way. He says probably it's best not to stand like a stone. It's probably also best not to shake like a meshugana. Probably best to find some sort of happy medium, as most things in life and Judaism. It's a good idea to find some sort of happy medium. And the Mishnah Berurah says, whatever works for you. Some people have better kavana when they shake a little, some people have better kavana when they stand still. It's not really a very strong, serious topic. One thing the Mishnah Berurah points out, and this is something that we just spoke about, Mishnah Berurah says you have to be careful when you daven, the shaking should not involve only the head, where you go from right to left like this. It says you should daven the whole, you can shake your body, you can keep the head bad, but it shouldn't be shaking the head back and forth, because that's derech gaiva. Anything that's derech gaiva, we don't want to do. Anything that makes us look like we have arrogance in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that we stay far, far away from in our tefillah. That's the yisod of all of the halachos, of how a person is supposed to look and stand during tefillah, are all based on the idea that we're trying to look as humble as we possibly can, because we're standing in front of the Melech Malchei Amlachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Good, that's for the less serious part of the shir. Now, in terms of the more serious part of the shir, we're supposed to be talking about kavana in tefillah. So, how much kavana does a person have to have? We try our best, but what is the halacha in terms of kavana? So, if you look at the Rambam, source number 32, says the Rambam, Perek Dalit of Hilchas Tefillah Nesias Kapayim, Halacha Aleph, Chamisha Devarim Ma'akvines HaTefillah, Afal Pishe Giyaz Mana. There are five things that hold back a tefillah, meaning that if you don't have any of these things, then you can't daven. Even though the zman of tefillah is coming and it's going, and you might miss it, don't daven unless you take care of these five issues. What are they? Taharas yadayim, kisoy ha'erva, taharas makom tefillah, darim hachov simoso, and the final one, the one that we're interested in, kavana salev. If you can't have kavana, I don't care about the zman, says the Rambam, it's ma'akev the tefillah. How do we define kavana, says the Rambam? Halacha tezvav, 14 halachas later. Kavana salev, because first he has to discuss the other four. Right, he goes in order. First, the first halacha is the heading, then he's going to discuss it. But then he finally gets back to kavana. Kavana salev ketzad. What does kavana mean? called Tfila She'ena B'Kavana Eina Tfila. First of all, let me tell you, says the Rambam, if you have davening and you're not having Kavana during your davening, that's not called davening. That's number one. V'mispalel below Kavana, Chozer mispalel B'Kavana. If you've already davened and you realize, uh-oh, I didn't have Kavana, do it again. You have to daven again. Matzah daito meshubeshes v'libo tarud osel l'spalel ad shetis yashiv daito. If you find that you're not able to focus, don't daven yet. Wait till you calm your mind down when you're able to focus, and then daven. L'ficha chababin aderech v'u oyef o'meitzar osel l'spalel ad shetis yashiv daito. You just came back from a big trip, and you're tired, and you're not focused, and your brain's not totally there. Don't daven. You're not going to be able to daven anyway. Your tefillah is not going to be a tefillah anyway. That's what the Rambam says. Unbelievable. And Amru Chacham Yisha Shlosha Yamim Machi Yenuach V'Tiskara Daito. Wait 3 days. Then you'll be calmer, and then you'll... I don't think we generally follow that, right? Wait 3 days till you daven next. What if it's 2 days before Yom Kippur? I don't know. But wait 3 days, and then you'll daven again. V'achar kach yisbal, and then you'll daven. Then again, halacha tezayin. Ketzad hu akavana, sheyifna es libo mikol ha-machshavos. Get all of the thoughts out of your mind. V'yira atzmo kilu omid lefnei ha-shechina. And look at yourself as if you are standing in front of the ribon. So I'm standing in front of the shechina. Seems as clear as could possibly be. Kavana is so critical that without it, you don't have a tefillah. Problem is, the Rambam is source number 33. Six chapters later in Hilchos Tefillah, Unasiyas Kapayim, the very first halacha of Perek Yud, Mi Shehispalel Velo Kiven Eslibo, Yachsav Yispalel B'Kavana. Right, so far we're good. You daven, you didn't have Kavana, go back and daven again. That's exactly what we were saying until now. But then you throw something new in. Vim Kiven Eslibo B'Bracha Rishona, Shoven Otzarech. If you had Kavana during the first bracha, okay, that will be good enough. Kavana during the first bracha is enough to count as Kavana. Now, in Perek Dalet, he went through a whole bunch of talk about Kavana. Nothing about the first bracha being anything different than the other brachas. Sounds like you really need Kavana, and without Kavana, your tefillah is garbage. So why is it that only if you have Kavana in the first bracha, that's going to be Ma'akev? Kavana in the rest of the bracha is not Ma'akev? What's the Rambam doing over here? Is he chozer from one halacha to six chapters later? So there's a very well-known Reb Chaim, very well-known Chiddush of Reb Chaim regarding tefillah, and it's Kedai L'Chazer once in a while. It's a very severe Reb Chaim. A lot of times people say it over, it's like it's Geshmak HaTorah, but it's very, very severe. If you think about how high he sets the bar for our Kavana during tefillah, we hope we don't pass them like this Reb Chaim, because it's an extremely severe Reb Chaim. Says Reb Chaim, V'nir lomar, the trei gavni kavanos yesh betfilah. There are two types of kavana when it comes to davening. Ha'achas, kavana shel perush hadvarim. Know what the words mean. V'yesoda hudin kavana. That's kavana. V'sheinis, the second type of kavana, classic Reb Chaim, tzvei dinim, sheyechavein shu omed betfilah lefnei Hashem. They should have kavana, not for what the words mean, just to know what you're doing. Know that you're standing in front of the Ribbono shel Olam. That's exactly what the Rambam writes in Perek Dalet. He says, what is Kavana? Kavana is standing there, realizing that you're talking to God. Says Reb Chaim, the first type of Kavana, knowing what the words mean, that's what we normally associate Kavana with, right? The second type of Kavana, he says, that's not really kavana. Kavana is probably not the best word to use to describe that. He says, that's really just tefillah. That's what tefillah means. Tefillah means you understand that you're standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you don't have that kavana, then you might be doing something, but whatever you're doing, it's not davening. It's not tefillah. Tefillah is you're talking to God. V'imein libo ponoi v'ein roe esatzmo shomi l'fnei Hashem u'mispalel ein zemaisa tefillah. If you don't see yourself as talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's not tefillah. It's as if you didn't do any maisa at all. So where is it critical to have that second type of kavana? The kavana that you're talking to God throughout the entire tefillah. There's no part where you can let up on that kavana. Beginning to end, entirely, you need to realize that you're standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. If, let's say, you started with Kavana realizing that you're talking to God in the first two brachas, and then you space out for a little bit and you come back in around the 14th bracha, right? And you realize again that you're talking to God. So says Reb Chaim, you didn't say the other brachas. You didn't daven the other brachas. Words may have come out of your mouth, but that's not tefillah, because you weren't talking to anybody. You were talking to yourself, like a crazy man. You weren't talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's not tefillah. Velovade delinian etzim atefillah kol yotes brachos ma'achdin. Right? If someone were to ask a shayla, Rabbi, I daven the first two brachos and the last five brachos. Am I yotzei shmon esrei? Of course not. Right? So why is this any different? Reb Chaim says, if you didn't realize you're standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam for all these brachos, then you didn't say those brachos. Mele, it's not a tefillah at all. V'rak hecha shemechavinu makir maisav v'yodeh shu omid betefillah. If you know that you're standing in front of God and you know that you're davening, you just don't know what the words mean. Meaning sometimes a person is very sincere. Most of our yeshivas don't teach us from a young age what the words of tefillah mean. And a person who does know what the words mean is either because he learned to speak Hebrew fairly fluently, or he took the time to sit there and try to learn what all those words mean. But on his own. But very often our educational system, with all the dollars and years on yeshivas that we spend, we never learn the basics. Just, what do the words mean? What's going on? So if you don't know what the words mean, but you sincerely want to pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? You sincerely realize, you're standing there, I mean, perfect example, let's say, slichos, right? You know that your life is on the line now, because this is crunch time. But the words of slichos and Ribbono Shel Olam, you could be very fluent in Hebrew and not have any idea what it's talking about. Right? So you have no idea what it means, but you're sincere, as sincere as possible, that you're pouring out your heart to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What you're thinking of may have no connection to the words, but you realize that you're standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It says that's the other type of kavana. That's the kavana as long as you have that kavana that you're standing in front of Hashem, the kavanah of the Perush HaMilim is not going to be ma'akev, except for the first bracha. In the first bracha, that kavanah is going to be ma'akev as well. He says, "B'zehu dairi asugi de brachos lama dalid hamispal tzorach sheyichavin libo b'kol ha-brachos. V'yimeinu yachol l'chavin es libo b'kulam yichavin ba'achas mehen." And that's the kind of kavanah the Gemara was talking about when it says, at least have kavanah in one of the brachos. Which one? The first one. And that's where we're going to say they have to have, that the first one is different than the rest. And if you look back in the Rambam, it's fairly meduyak. The Rambam in Perek Dalid of Hilchos Tefillah, what did the Rambam say? Kavana Salev Ketzad, Halacha Tezayin, look back in the source number 32 in Halacha Tezayin, what does he say? Ketzad Ua Kavana, what is the Kavana that I'm talking about? Sheyifne Eslibo Mikalamach Shavos, V'yira Atzmo Ki Ilu Hu Omid Lefnei Hashchina. Not a word about what we would normally associate Kavana with. Not a word about understanding the words. It's all about just seeing yourself standing in front of God. That's the entire din of kavana. So apparently, says Reb Chaim in Perek Dalid, the Rambam is talking about the kavana of knowing that you're praying. That's absolutely ma'akev at any point and every point during the tefillah. In Perek Yud, the Rambam is talking about the kavana of knowing what the words mean. Okay, that's only ma'akev in the first bracha. So if you really want to study one bracha to really know what the words mean, pick the first one. Because that's the only one that's truly ma'akev. The rest of the tefillah is not ma'akev. Now, why do I say it's so harsh? Because Reb Chaim leaves you no room to space out at all. Right? He says you space out for one bracha in the middle of Shemon Esrei, and the whole Shemon Esrei is down the toilet. If you weren't thinking, I'm standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, for any part of the Shemon Esrei, the whole thing is gone. The whole entire Shemon Esrei is gone. Unbelievable. It's an unbelievable chumrah. No, I mean, it's logical. It's hard to argue with on logical grounds. It's hard to say that a person who's standing there and isn't thinking about the fact that he's standing in front of God should be Yotzei Tefillah, meaning make the argument that he should. It's a very hard argument to make. What's he doing? He's not, you know, it's not like other, what Reb Chaim's point is, it's not like other mitzvos where this is even taller in the issue of mitzvah shrikas kavana. He gets into a discussion of mitzvah shrikas kavana, but if I pick up a lulav and esrog and I didn't have kavana to be yotzei the mitzvah, I still picked up a lulav and esrog. But tefillah is not the mice of tefillah is not saying words. The mice of tefillah is saying words to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So if I just say words but it's not to the Ribbono Shel Olam, then that's not a mice of tefillah. and I didn't do tefillah. Right? So you're missing the whole mice over here without the proper kavana. He happens to say, since we pass the mitzvah tzrichas kavana, you have that issue also. If you don't realize that you're only lifnei Hashem, then you're not yotze anyway, because we pass the mitzvah tzrichas kavana. So forget about the fact that it's not even a maisa tefillah. You're not yotze because mitzvah tzrichas kavana. So it's like two reasons why it's very severe. But again, it seems very harsh just in terms of the reality, in terms of how many of us actually have the kind of kavana that he's talking about. So it should be noted that Reb Chaim said this chiddush, and this is probably one of the most well-known Reb Chaims that exist, because it's for a few reasons. First of all, it's not hard; it's pretty easy, Reb Chaim. Second of all, it's about a topic that we can. It's not like in Maisa Karbanos or something. It's in a topic that we can all relate to, and it's also at the beginning of the Sefer. So we get to it. If anyone wants to open up a Reb Chaim and learn a Reb Chaim, this is the second one they'll find. So they'll usually get to it. So it's a very well-known Reb Chaim, but later Achronim were not so thrilled with this Reb Chaim. They thought it was a little bit harsh to say that a kavana that lacking that kavana that you're only lifnei Hashem at any point in the tefillah is going to ruin the entire tefillah seems a bit harsh. But you have a stira in the Rambam. So if you're going to reject the Reb Chaim, you better come up with a different pshat. Why does the Rambam Perek Dalet say that kavana at any point, lack of kavana rather, at any point destroys everything? And yet in Perek Yud he says, only the first bracha. So the Chaznish and the Gilyonos on the side of the Reb Chaim, the Chaznish says, if you look in source number 35, by the way, this source in general, especially source 34 and 35 are full of typos because I typed it in myself. So wasn't a cut and paste, so it's full of typos. I apologize for that. So if you see something that doesn't make sense or a word that you can't figure out, it's probably because the word doesn't exist. So if you look in source number 35, the Chaznish explains, he says in the third line, the efshar kavanas hagonzal b'shah sha'omid l'spal v'kala tefila stomach l'shma. He says, much more likely that you have to have these kavanas when you start to daven. And then the whole tefillah is nigrar after the kavanas that you have at the beginning. And it's all considered lishma. So then there's nothing worth talking about if you only do it for avos or not, because as long as you have kavanah at the beginning of your tefillah that you're omid lifnei Hashem, then the whole rest of the tefillah is nigrar after the beginning of the tefillah, so there's nothing to talk about. Avos, two brachos, one bracha, 10 brachos, doesn't matter. It all goes basar meikar, it all goes after the beginning. However, he says, had it not been for Reb Chaim, I would have suggested a different pshat. The Rambam in Perek Dalet is talking about the idea of tefillah. He's not giving specifics. He's just telling us what tefillah is, how to approach tefillah. He's not giving specific halachos. He's not crossing all the T's, dotting all the I's on this is exactly what the halacha is, if this happens, if that happens. He's just telling us what tefillah is. Avol shir shechivu chacham la'akev pirish b'perek yud. When the Rambam gets into the nitty-gritty, that's later on. In Perek Yud, he gets into the nitty-gritty. Okay, you need to know exactly how much of it is ma'akev, how much is not ma'akev. So that comes in Perek Yud. V'chein b'gemara lo tanina b'chad duchta. And he says, you'll see, the Rambam just followed the pattern of the Gemara. The Gemara didn't have all of it in one place. The Gemara was also a little bit scattered. V'yesh b'divrei ha-Rambam, and that's got to be a typo, ma'amari chazal ba'aflagas ha-kavana, av'le'in kula ma'akvim. The Rambam has a lot of things about how important kavana is, and not everything the Rambam says about the importance of kavana in Perek Dalet is really ma'akev. For example, v'imaman mitoch halacha sheina psuka, eino chazer mispalo. Right? The Rambam says, you're supposed to get up to daven mitoch halacha psuka. You know when your mind racing, when you get up to daven. So right before davening, you shouldn't be too involved in the sugya right before davening. So one of my chaverim told me that in a very well-known Rosh Yeshiva, in a very major yeshiva in America, before he davens, when the yeshiva davens, I think I mentioned this last week, when the yeshiva davens Mariv, he's always so caught up in the sugya that he doesn't realize that the yeshiva started Mariv. And every single night, Keseder, he gets up at the end of Mariv and gives a clap and says a baruch hu, because he always first catches on that they're all down, because he's so far tumult in the sugya that he doesn't even realize there's tefillah. So that's what we try to avoid. Right? So the Rambam says, in order to avoid that, you should be omid l'spal mitoch halacha psuka. Say a very quick halacha. Read a Chayyadam, read a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, something just halacha psuka. Okay, it is, nothing to talk about, nothing to question, and weiter, let's daven now. So, es chaznish. Rambam quotes that. It's supposed to be Yom Adus Pam, we talk halacha psuka. So if we daven after this shir, right? It's not a halacha psuka, and we're all going to be for tumult in the, about kavanah b'tfilah. So we have to go and we have to say the whole tefillah again. It's a bad tefillah? Of course not. So it's not everything Rav Chaim says, and not everything the Rambam says in Perek Dalet is a din li'ikuva. He's explaining to you what tefillah is really all about. When he gets down to what the details are, that's in Perek Yud. So he says, it's not a stira. The Rambam Perek Dalet is telling you tefillah is supposed to be omid l'fnei Hashem, and if you're not omid l'fnei Hashem, it's terrible, and if you're not omid l'fnei mitoch halacha psuka, it's bad, and on and on and on. And in Perek Yud, he gives you the details. What we call a balabat shateret, right? He's not giving you any major lumdas. He's just saying that's the way the book reads. That's how to read the Mishnah Torah. That's what the Rambam is doing. Are there any rayas that Reb Chaim is wrong? Because again, logically, Reb Chaim is very compelling to say that a person who doesn't realize he's talking to God is not davening makes a ton of sense. It's very difficult to reject. So we need a raya to reject it. So comes along Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. In Mincha Shlomo, Chelik Aleph, Simen Aleph, didn't take him long. Very first tshuva in Mincha Shlomo. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, in the second paragraph there, in source number 36, Halach, I'm sure we've all heard before. Most of us have learned Maseches Brachos at one time or another. Everyone starts the Daf Yomi, right? So in Simen Samach Dal and Shulchan Aruch, quotes the Gemara in Brachos, the Mishnah Brachos, Ya'omid Bivuk Savtem, Sheparsha Shnia. Let's say you're in the middle of saying Kriya Shema. Then you realize, I have no idea where I'm up to in Shema. Right? So what do you go back to? So you just said the word Ksavtem. So not sure if I'm in the first Parsha, second Parsha, right, which one I'm in. Dim Hiskel Leman Yirbu Yimechem, if by rote you just ran into Leman Yirbu Yimechem, you don't have to go back, because if by rote you went into Leman Yirbu Yimechem, the stomach, you were really up to the second parsha. So if that's what you did, just by rote, so mistama, that's where you were really holding. You weren't holding me the first parsha. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman, no, what's the raya?
Obviously, it's acceptable.
Yeah, if you have no idea where you are, you obviously weren't having kavanah the whole time that you're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Well, if you weren't having kavanah the whole time, you're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam, according to Reb Chaim, any lack of kavanah ruins the whole thing anyway. I don't care where you're really holding. Mentally, you're holding nowhere. So you got to start again. So says Reb Shlomo Zalman, you see that apparently it's all tally on where we assume you were holding. And it's not tally on where you were holding mentally, it's tally on what words you were saying.
Is there any difference between Shmoneh
Esrei? So that's the obvious, right, the obvious point that we have to make is, wait a second, this is Kriya Shema. This isn't Shmoneh Esrei, right? Reb Chaim is talking about Tefillah, not Kriya Shema. Could be Kriya Shema, as the name would suggest, is a din in Kriya, not a din in being Mispalel. Now the first pasuk, Kabbal Sal Malch Shemayim, okay, so that you're only Mekabal Al Malch Shemayim, if you're really Mekabal Al Malch Shemayim, you should have Kavanah to be Mekabal Al Mitzvos at some point. That's already a different level of Kavanah. So unclear, but let's see how Rav Shlomo Zalman presents it. He says, V'talina d'mistama amr k'fi hergel l'shon alomer l'man yirbu achar k'saftim shebishniya u'kumeduma d'hai dina l'mishkachas al b'misha korei v'lo yada klal shuhu korei. This din could only apply to someone who's saying Shema, reading Shema, but doesn't even realizing that he's reading Shema. D'chashav k'misasek. And in that way, he's considered as a misasek. V'afilu hachi yotze yedei kriya Shema. And still he's yotze. U'mashma migzeh shegamlin yin misasek mol mashen eskavin b'tchila. And he says, from this I see that even when it comes to misasek, it's good enough to have kavan at the beginning, but tzarechiyun. Now, why is he not making that chiluk between kriya Shema and tefillah? Because misasek by kriya Shema shouldn't work either. Not having kavanah for a mitzvah is one thing. But the idea that if you don't even realize what you're doing when it comes to something of dibur to God, that that's called misasek, and misasek is not a maisa at all, right? Misasek is pater in Hilchos Shabbos. It's not a maisa, it's not even a chayv karbon in Hilchos Shabbos, right? It's not even a maisa at all. So the idea that a misasek means nothing by tefillah should carry over to Shema. So he says, why isn't it misasek? So Shlomo Zalman says, look, logically Reb Chaim may be very compelling, but it's enough in the Mishnah that it's not so compelling. right? Why not? So you have to say that, you know, l'nit n'tor l'malach ha'yashares. We try our best to daven with kavana, but as long as we go into it with the proper kavana, and we discussed last week about how so much of it is preparatory work, making sure that we set everything up in advance to gear ourselves toward kavana. So as long as we go into it with the proper kavana, that's all the Ribbono Shel'Olam asks of us, and try our best, and we try our best the rest of the way. Rav Avadia Yosef also comments on this Reb Chaim in source number 37. Rav Avadia Yosef, interestingly, he says, he starts off a paragraph, Lam re'isi b'chudusha Rabbeinu Chaim alevi mibris. It's almost as if, like what Rav Avadia Yosef writes, the most famous shtickle Torah in the world is the same to him as like some obscure passage in some sefer somewhere. Re'isi, yeah, I just saw, everyone knows this Reb Chaim. Come on, he's Rav Avadia Yosef, he knows everything backwards and forwards. Such a lashon of Re'isi, I was just struck by the lashon. But yeah, I just happened to see in the Chidush Reb Chaim Alevi. Maybe Sfarim don't learn Reb Chaim so much, I don't know, but just Re'isi Chidush Rabbeinu Chaim Alevi. I can tell you everything, Maram Palaji and this one and that one, you know, every word they ever breathed in their dreams, but Re'isi, I just happened to come across Reb Chaim. So he quotes the whole Reb Chaim, beginning to end, he summarizes the whole thing. And then, toward the end of source 37, he says, Ulefize, Harambam, Tano Upalag Aldivri Atosva Rashanal, Desavri Shaflin Kavanas Pirush Advarim Tsaruk Lamud Daito. He says, according to Tosfos and the Rush, even when it comes to figuring out whether you're going to be able to focus on what the words mean, you have to do an estimation before you daven. Am I going to be able to make it? Am I going to be able to do it? Do I have the mind power right now to focus that much? Right? But the Rambam would say, no, you don't have to have such focus you don't have to think about whether you're going to be able to make it with the Pirush HaMilim. You do have to think about whether you're going to be able to make it with the Amidah Lefnei Hashem. But you don't have to think about whether you're going to be able to make it to have that Kavana with the Pirush HaMilim. So he says, but there's a Gemara. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed tells us as follows. Reb Chiya bar Abba tzali v'hadar tzali. Reb Chiya bar Abba davened and then davened again. So Amar le Rabbi Zera, right? It took a lot of whenever you see someone chashva rav, let's say daven and then start a Shmon Esrei again. It's embarrassing, right? Everyone's looking and he starts the Shmon Esrei again. So it's admirable. He wasn't embarrassed to start again, right? But Rabbi Zera wouldn't let him go. Reb Chiya bar Abba davens and davens again. So says Rabbi Zera, hey, what was that all about? My time of in Marachi, why did you do that? Ilema Mishum Delo Kivin Mar Daite. Why, you didn't have Kavana the first time? Well, then you really messed up because, you know, before you daven, you're supposed to cheshbin whether you're able to have Kavana or not. And you didn't. So that's terrible. Meaning, well, how could you have ignored that halacha? That's impossible. Right? How could it be that you have to daven a second time because you didn't have Kavana the first time? You're supposed to think about before you start davening whether you're able to have kavana, and if you're not, don't daven. So how did that happen? Ella must be, I know what happened. Taloid gamar d'reish yarcha. You skipped Yalav Yavo. Happens to all of us. You forgot Yalav Yavo. Shechter always likes to point out that when it comes to Yalav Yavo, we know in Rosh Chodesh, by Mariv, you don't repeat Shmon Esrei of Yalav Yavo. But Shachar and Milcha we do. So we often think, okay, so Yalav Yavo is not so important by Mariv. So Shachar always likes to say, no, Yalav Yavo is more important by Mariv because you're never going to be able to make it up. You're going to lose it forever. Shachar's Milcha, at least you'll be able to make it up. At least you'll be able to say it again. So really important not to forget by Mariv. Okay. But anyway, so the Gemara goes on. So it says Rav Avadia Yosef, V'im Isa l'divrei hagon mibrisk, amai ka'amar el delo adkar d'reish yarcha. If Reb Chaim is right, why does he say, oh, it must be you forgot Yalav Yavo? V'tepikle d'bekavana gufa yishchilek v'in pirush advarim v'in kavana samidasa b'tfilil v'nei Hashem Yisparach. If Reb Chaim holds that this omer hadas that a person needs to do in advance of davening is only true of the idea that he's going to be able to be focused on the fact that he's omer b'fnei Hashem, but not on whether he's going to be able to make it through the Perush HaMilim, and the Perush HaMilim is ma'akev in the first bracha, there's another possibility of how it could be that, who was it, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba? Yeah, how Rabbi Chiya bar Abba may have repeated the Shmona Esrei, right? Without having made a mistake. You don't have to do an Omer Hadas when it comes to the Perush HaMilim. So he didn't. And then he realized after the first bracha that he didn't get, he wasn't focused on the Perush HaMilim in the first bracha. So that's why he had to repeat Shmon Esrei. According to Reb Chaim, that's glat, right? That could be a very strong possibility of why he had to repeat Shmon Esrei. But it doesn't say that in the Gemara. He right away jumps to, you must have forgotten Yalav Yavo. So Elamai says Rav Avadia must be Reb Chaim's wrong. It must be that there's no such din by the Perush HaMilim that you need to have Kavanah in the Perush HaMilim in the first bracha, and if not, then you're going to have to repeat Shmona Esrei. There's no such thing as this whole Tzvei Dinim when it comes to Kavanah, and that's why the whole group of Achronim say that everything is Nigrar Basar Meikara in terms of the Yom Lefnei Hashem or Perush HaMilim, depending which Achron you go like, and the first bracha is the only bracha where Kavanah, however you define it, is truly Ma'akev. Okay, we'll stop there. We'll move on to some other topic in Tefillah of Bez Hashem next week.